Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always. But you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to ESOpodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 152 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics 1011, Detective Comics 1004, Dial H for Hero number 2 and 3, Justice League Dark number 11, The Terrifics number 16, Wonder Woman number 71, and Swamp Thing season 1 episode 1 pilot. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Robert Pattinson has been confirmed as the Batman. This new take on Batman is set to be a trilogy of films from Matt Reeves, which is why the contract negotiations with Pattinson could take a little bit of time. There are likely options worked into the next two movies in the saga, and the new series will follow Bruce Wayne during his formative years as Batman, which is why an actor in his early 30s was ideal.
I mean, I'm still very excited for this movie. The casting's fine. It's sort of a wait and see thing. Like, if he's great, he's great. It doesn't really matter to me who.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me either. I mean, everybody always complains about casting and stuff. I've gotten to the point where I don't really give a rat's ass as long as he does
a good job.
I really
don't think there's any actor that they could cast that everybody would be like, oh yeah, they nailed it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just, you can't win. So, I mean, I think there's a good chance that he'll be good. And if he is, that's great. That's awesome. I have to say, though, I'm not, like, do we need to see the formative years of Batman again?
I don't want to see an origin story.
Can't we just jump in? I thought the whole thing, at one point, I know this project has been under so much change. But at one point, I was pretty sure this movie was supposed to just be like a Batman movie. Like, it just threw you in. Like, he was already Batman. It's just a Batman story. Like, I would rather at this point, and I think most people see that. I mean, they did that with Spider-Man. I think that was one of the things that made the Marvel version of Spider-Man work, was because we didn't have to watch him become Spider-Man again.
I know. It was great just to watch him being Spider-Man.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe this is, he is already Batman, but he's not been Batman that long. That could work.
Yeah, well,
I really don't need to see his origin again.
Well, that worked with Spider-Man Homecoming because he wasn't that experienced either. So,
yeah.
But he had been Spider-Man for a while, which was good.
Right, we didn't have to see him get bit by the spider or see Uncle Ben die. Like, the same thing, like, I don't need to see his parents shot again, even though there's a 100% chance that we're going to see his parents get shot again. I literally don't think it's possible to do a Batman movie and not have that scene somewhere in there, apparently. But yeah, so anyway, long story short, cool. I'm hoping this is the project is going to start picking up speed now a little bit, given the just insanely slow nature that it's been going under. But I'm excited for this to finally actually start getting underway.
I am too. All right, for our next bit of news, announced at BookCon, the DC Black Label panel revealed a Joker Harley Quinn Criminal Insanity, which is scheduled for 9 issues monthly beginning October 2nd. In the Joker Harley Criminal Insanity, written by Cammy Garcia, and with artists Mike Mayhew and Miko Sayoan, Harley Quinzel is given a bit more agency as she's reimagined as a forensic psychiatrist profiler, called in by the Gotham City Police Department to help stop a serial killer known as the Joker.
I suspect this series will sell very well.
I imagine so.
I'm not personally all that interested in it, but I think a lot of people will be, and that's great.
Yeah, and because of that, we will probably be reviewing it for this podcast. But yeah, I know you're not big on Harley Quinn.
I mean, it's just that and like I like the Joker, but like in small doses for me. I know that that's not a widely shared opinion, and that's totally fine. It's just for me, I can do like a Joker story every once in a while. I don't need to read 5 Joker stories in a row.
All right, and moving on to our last bit of DC news. Tom King is co-writing the New Gods movie.
Yeah, so Ava DuVernay, who was announced as the director for this a while ago, put out on Twitter that she and Tom King are co-writing this, which makes sense. If you talk about recent writers, I would pick him. Honestly, though, the thing that shocked me the most about this was that they're still actually making this movie. I knew that they announced it. So they announced this somewhat like shortly after her Wrinkle in Time movie came out last year. It didn't do super well. And then also just the nature of DC films, I figured like, okay, sure. Yeah, that one's totally going to get made. And it is. Like, it looks like it is actually going to get made, which is, that was the biggest shock of the whole announcement. I was like, wait, they're still making this?
So, yeah, that's pretty cool. I'm glad Tom King's attached to it, because his Mr. Miracle miniseries is friggin' awesome.
It was so good. I wonder if this might also explain the change on the Batman title, too. Potentially.
Oh, that could very well be, too.
I, again, think there was a lot of factors. I don't think there's one simple answer to that, but this could be another factor that was behind that change.
Yeah, I could see that. He would need more free time to work on that. Plus, with his other projects going on, too. I mean, it's not like he's not going to be finishing his Batman run in Batman Catwoman anyways. I wonder if that was kind of like a compromise. He wanted to finish his run, but he wasn't sure if he'd be able to get it done monthly, so they gave him this mini series, which doesn't start till way out. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think you and I will ever know, unless, but that could make sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm excited to see what this movie could be. I think it could be really cool.
I think so too, and it'll be different from other superhero movies, just kind of like Shazam was compared to some of the other DC ones they put out.
Well, what I'm interested in this too is Marvel is making an Eternals movie, and I'm curious which one gets made first. I almost think it matters a little bit which one gets made first. You know what I mean?
Because, yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure the Eternals was Jack Kirby also.
I think so.
And they were basically they're basically the same versions of, like, they're basically just the same Jack Kirby idea, but in different companies. If I'm off base on that, somebody let me know. But I'm pretty sure that they're basically, because Thanos is an Eternal, I believe, in the comics, and he's Darkseid. I mean, he's basically Darkseid.
Okay.
So I'll be curious because I know Marvel's making that, and we know Marvel doesn't have the production issues, let's say, that DC does. And I think they've got casting done already, so I'm pretty sure they've got an edge in that. So I'd be curious. I would assume they'd be completely different movies, but if you've got a similar concept, I wonder if some people would dismiss the DC one, even though I think the New Gods came first.
So I don't know, but I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we have a sneaking suspicion that you don't actually listen to these promos.
So we're not going to make you listen to one.
Bye! brought to you by the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast where Joe and Tony watch all of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Available on the ESO Network or wherever else you get podcasts from.
But honestly, where else would you go?
WatchYourRassilon.com?
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Action Comics number 1011. So, this issue opens up with Maggie Sawyer and the Metropolis Special Crimes Unit trying to arrest Kate Spencer, who is able to evade this arrest. This is the same character we saw talking to Mr. Bones last issue.
Yeah, so they definitely more firmly established this character in this issue, but it seems unclear whether she's really the main villain or not.
Yeah,
is that clear to you?
That's not clear to me either. So they're still got that wrapped in mystery, and I imagine it's gonna be for a little bit until they're ready to reveal it. So we also see in this issue that Lois Lane gets a gift from Tiger, and it's every secret, every name, the story of Spiral, and Tiger wants Lois to write a story about it because Perry wants him to have two sources. Superman and Lois go to the Huntress to collaborate the story and get the second source that Perry demands. So we see that happen in this issue.
Seems like a really weird subplot, though.
Yeah,
it was. I didn't totally get the point of that.
Honestly, it didn't really need to be in there.
That's kind of what I thought. It seemed like it was an excuse to get Huntress into the scene, but I was like, they could also just go talk to Huntress. It was odd. I just thought that was odd. I mean, I guess it makes sense because a lot of this book overall has been focused around the Daily Planet. So I guess, but it was such a weird detail. It's like, that's a very oddly specific reason to go do something.
Yeah, you're right. They could have just skipped it and just went to Huntress and said, hey, can you tell us if this is true information?
Yeah, I mean, can't really complain about it. It didn't harm the comic in any way, but it was just, I remember thinking it was odd. I was like, really? That's a plot point?
So we see Superman and Lois return to the Fortress of Solitude and discover that Amanda Waller had escaped under suspicion when Jimmy had accused her of being Leviathan. Now, in episode 149, we talked about the year of the villain number one. And in that story, Amanda Waller goes to the White House to talk to the president, and she finds the Legion of Doom there. And we talked about how DC was trying to connect the stories, but we knew Waller was still in the Fortress of Solitude. Well, apparently this is the story where the stories connect. However, DC kind of screwed up and didn't get this story released before the year of the villain.
I don't know, though. I still feel like that scene has to happen either still quite a bit in the future of this story or was supposed to have happened before this story. It's got to be one of the two, because this issue ends and we see her crashed somewhere in Mexico out of that pod. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't seem like the next step was her going in a nice suit to the White House.
Oh, did we see her crash? I don't remember that.
It's like the last page where they've got each of Jimmy, Lois, and Superman are all asking like the three important questions about Leviathan. And you get these other little pictures of other things going on. And one of which is Waller getting out of the crashed pod.
Okay, I missed it.
It's a small, it's not like the main, it's not like a whole panel on its own. It's like part of a collage. So it would be easy to miss if you're not really looking at the whole thing.
All right, and I missed it. All right, so, well, I guess that's not all not all cut and clear then, like I tried to make it.
But I still don't get Jim. Like, this issue didn't justify Jimmy's actions to me. Like, I thought he would be up to something with that, and it didn't totally seem like he was, other than he got a picture of her, which, I mean, great. He's got a picture of Amanda Waller. But it was like, if you actually legitimately think that she is behind this, which this did not suggest that she's not, why would you just upfront tell her that if you're Jimmy Olsen, photographer?
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
It didn't. Well, no, and I thought maybe there would be something in this issue that would explain or justify that, and it didn't really. It was basically just like, I just said it. I thought that maybe she was, and her reaction tells me that maybe she is. And I was like, but she could have killed you.
Yeah.
What was your plan? Like, that was the thing. Like, I thought there would be more to the plan. Like, he had some sort of fail-safe. I'm just going to accuse her while I'm standing 2 feet away from her.
Don't worry, Keelix will keep him safe. The other thing, does Jimmy Olsen look younger than he should be in this comic?
Well, yeah, because he seemed younger than he did in the beginning of this story. He seemed like he was in his like low 20s.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And this one, he seemed like he was getting down into his teens.
I know. That's what I thought, too. I'm like, I think you're supposed to be older, dude.
I wonder if Bendis is wanting to write a more classic young Jimmy and is like somehow secretly de-aging him each comic so that it, like, you just like every issue he looks slightly younger, so then you just don't notice it.
By the end of his run, he'll have a pacifier in his mouth and a rattle in his ear. I don't know. He just looks really young. I'm like, you should be older than that, dude. Superman's...
Well, he seemed like he was being written younger also. So the Jimmy in this comic didn't seem necessarily like a guy that would be going out on a date. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, what we saw at the beginning of this.
I'm sorry. I want an older Jimmy. I don't want this young Jimmy.
I want James.
There you go. James Olsen. So this Leviathan event's still pretty clouded in mystery. We don't know what's going on. And I'm ready to find out some more info. We keep getting these little tidbits.
I'm hoping that the reveal is worth it, because otherwise we've basically treaded water for 4 issues for a lackluster reveal.
Yeah, I hope it's good, too, because otherwise Supergirl's probably going to suck this coming season.
Well, I mean, I think the show could adapt it to make it something. I'm not saying that this story won't be good, but, I mean, the entire last, like, there's going to be, like, 3 or 4 issues that are predicated entirely on the reveal at the end, right? I mean, nothing really major happens in these past 2 or 3 comics. I mean, like, yes, okay, I know that the agencies are getting shut down, but like beyond, once that happens, once the setup happens, all these agencies get attacked, right?
Right.
Everything else is basically just them running around, not getting any answers, or getting answers and Bendis not telling us.
And I have no problem with these agencies not coming back either. On a personal note.
There was a lot. I do think part of this was DC kind of clearing house a little bit, being like, look, there are too many secret agencies. We need to, like, streamline. We need to Crisis on Infinite Agencies down into one agency.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not the only ones that thought there was a lot of agencies. So if they streamline it down to one, that'd be fine with me. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Detective Comics number 1004. So last issue, we were afraid that the story was going to wrap up this issue, but it didn't. And in fact, it got more interesting, in my opinion. So in this issue, Jeremiah Arkham tells Batman and Robin the origin story of his daughter. He explains how he met his wife, her pregnancy, and how during a riot, some of the most dangerous inmates helped deliver her. Arkham's wife gets killed by a batarang thrown by some new transfer inmate to the asylum. And they don't reveal this killer's identity to us, but apparently Solomon Grundy crushed her head. The daughter ends up growing up in Arkham, sneaking around behind her father's back, talking with the inmates, and she eventually gets curious about her mother's death and finds out the truth that she was killed by the Batarang. But Arkham doesn't explain to her that it was not Batman who killed his wife, and he just lets his daughter's hate grow for him. Then we see the daughter gets, you know, she grows up, trains, and kind of builds her own cult, basically. What was your overall opinion of this issue?
This comic tells a good story. However, I think it asks two major leaps of faith that I personally could not make. One, that the Joker has any shred of humanity in him, that somehow Mrs. Arkham was magically able to appeal to so that he actually genuinely cared about her and enough to safely deliver her baby and then continue apparently to care for said baby after her death. What? This dude doesn't even care about Harley. He cares about this shrink? No, I'm sorry. I cannot buy that. I will buy literally every other Batman villain buying into that, but I cannot buy the Joker. And then the other leap of faith is that the Arkham Knight, I can't think of what her name is, the daughter Arkham, finds the footage of her mother's death, but doesn't find the footage showing that it wasn't Batman throwing the boomerang. She goes through and finds all of this other stuff, but doesn't find anything that suggests that it wasn't Batman. Again, I personally could not make that leap of faith. I thought it told a good story, but those two things, I was like, nah, man.
Two big plot holes right there.
For me personally, I know you can, for other people, they can read this and ignore that, and that's great. That's great that they get to enjoy the story. For me, I read that, I was like, come on. The Joker would be the one throwing the Batarang.
I looked past it. I was one of the people that looked past it. Yeah, the Joker, yeah, delivering a baby, I saw that too, and I'm like, okay, and I just moved on.
Well, see, like, I could believe that the Joker would deliver the baby, but not for pure intentions. I believe that he would do it with something much worse in mind.
Oh, yeah.
The whole implication is that he, along with all the other inmates, legitimately cares about Mrs. Arkham, which is just unbelievable. I literally do not believe that. That would be the only person in the world that the Joker, post becoming the Joker, gives any care about.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with you on that one. The Joker.
I get it for the shock value, because you see the Joker spanking the baby initially, like earlier on, you're like, oh, that's not good. And then you see it. And I get the appeal of that twist, but it just, again, for me, it requires a leap of faith that I can't make.
Fair enough. All right. Well, do you think this story's going to go on for a bit?
No, I still think
it's going to wrap up next issue.
I think she gets defeated or talked to or whatever next issue. She could continue being I foresee her being a character, but this clearly has a conclusion coming next issue.
Okay. I was just wondering what your opinion on that was.
I think we will get some sort of ending. I don't think necessarily that that's the end of that character, though.
Fair enough. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Dial H for Hero number 2 and 3. All right, Cleus, I decided to go back and reread issue number 1 before I moved on to issue number 2 and issue number 3. And as everyone already knows, I did not care for issue 1. But after going back and rereading it, I went in with a different mindset this time. And I think when I read it the first time, I was looking for a more serious comic, and it just wasn't that. And I think that's why I didn't like it last time. This time I went in with a different mindset, knowing that it was a ridiculous comic, and I liked it a lot better. And I'm kind of curious about some of the stuff that's going on in it. One thing I was curious about is that the Ace Dial seems to be connected to whoever has used it in the past. And every time someone dials to become a hero, it kind of like, you see it like ring to everybody who's used it before. Am I correct in understanding that?
That seems to be the implication. And I get what they're going with that, because then that kind of drives the addiction that these people have, which I think is an interesting take.
Is this a
But what a miserable, like, I don't think, I'm not sure that the writer fully is wrapping it, like, what a miserable existence that would be.
I would hate that if it rang, you know, rang in my head every time it died.
But millions of people all over the world all of a sudden just share this comment, like, uh-oh, the phone, like, I know it doesn't seem that bad, but when you really sit down and think about it, like, that's awful.
That is awful. So, and is this something new? I've never read any Dal H for Hero stories before. I'm wondering if that's a new thing or if it's an old thing. Okay, you don't know either.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm sorry.
No problem. We don't know everything. We don't know everything about every DC comic on here. Not that we don't try.
I got to say, for me, the thing through the first three issues, what I have loved, the first one, I talked about it when we reviewed it. I loved the sort of parody of Rob Liefeld-esque characters of the 90s. And then these two, I really liked, like, the sort of, like, trippy out there Neil Gaiman or Grant Morrison kind of character. And then you had the girl that was sort of like a Lobo character. We had Manga in the second issue was really cool. That, like, the like playing with comic tropes and styles and kind of forming the comic like those styles, that is really cool to me. The plot itself is only mildly interesting, I have to admit.
I like seeing the old DC logo and stuff, you know, like seeing an old time cover. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. That's the thing. Like, the coolest parts to me are when they're messing around with the genres and kind of, like, putting you in that style of comic. That, to me, is super cool. That is a really cool idea. The plot is, it's fine. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not why I would keep reading this title. For me, the appeal to me as someone who loves comic books is a sort of, like, homage to comic history.
There was two things I was curious about these issues. I'm curious, who is the operator and what is his role to the H dial? Does he need to be having somebody dialing it to become heroes all the time for some reason? And the other thing I've been wondering is, who is Mr. Thunder and why does he want the H dial? Does he want it because he's addicted to it like some of the others we've seen? Or does he want it for more destructive purposes?
I'm not sure. Part of the reason I'm not sure is because I can't tell how seriously the comic is taking itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I know exactly what you mean.
Part of me thinks that it's going to end up being something a little silly, which is fine. I'm totally fine with that. But just based on what we've gotten so far, I feel like his motivation is going to be kind of funny. You know what I mean? Because, like, we got, like, at the end of issue two, he tells the cop, whatever you do, don't use the dial. And then it says, coming up the next issue, the officer uses the dial.
Yeah, I saw that,
like,
too.
That's the sort of comic that we're reading. So I can't imagine, like, it could be for nefarious reasons, but I feel like they're going to be, like, funny nefarious reasons.
That's fine. That's what type of comic this is. So, you know, I got over my issues with this because I'm just gotten to the point this is a ridiculous comic, and when I read it, I should expect ridiculous stuff. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Justice League Dark number 11. So we see the Lords of Order destroy Mira and its people. We see Blue Devil turn to stone, the Sword of the Night loses its power when Mira is destroyed, and Bobo and his friends are unable to escape. Right when Swamp Thing is about to declare that they would fight to the end, the bald dude states that they choose to live. And I was like, at first I was like, who is that bald dude? Then I remembered that it was Jason Blood. And he's starting to get really old because turned back into himself or has lost his magic or something.
He was separated from Etrigan.
Yeah, that's what it was. He was separated. I knew there
and
was
so
some...
now that he's purely human with no magic tied to him, he's that whatever the magic that was help keeping him the age that he was is going away.
Yeah, so he's dying basically. All right, we also see Xantana and Wonder Woman find Mordru, but the guy is a piece of crap and treats them like one.
It's a pretty accurate description, yeah. Can't say you're wrong.
So Wonder Woman calls out his fear about the other kind and the Lords of Order. But, of course, he never really admits to having this fear. He's rather into humiliating our heroines. But he ends up leaving them the Ruby of Life, which has enough power to rip through half the universe. So when Wonder Woman grabs it, it turns both Wonder Woman and Xantana into Lords of Chaos. I really like this issue.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this whole run has been very good. I highly recommend this title to people who are into... Really, if you like the magical side of DC, like Constantine, Dr. Fate, those sorts of characters, you really got to check this book out. It's really good.
It is really good. And the stakes are high in it. That's one thing I like about it. The stakes are high. And it's... well written, well drawn.
And what I really like, I agree that the stakes are high, but they're not like a chain of high stake events. I don't know if that makes sense. It's really been one continuous threat. And that's more appealing to me than six issues of a world ending crisis and then six issues of a world ending crisis, but different from the last one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are different threats that pop up within this, but it's all under the umbrella of this other kind.
Oh yeah, it's been, you gotta say, it's been a slow burn building to this. I mean, things keep happening and things keep getting worse, but it's all the same thing. Been the same threat the whole time.
And I think that's what's made this story so good, is because you're getting really invested in this story. The other kind were interesting when they were introduced. But if they were defeated within 10 issues, you'd be like, yeah, okay, that was a decent villain. But now, I care a lot about this conflict. We've gotten so much time invested into it that I feel like I really, truly actually care about the stakes in this story.
Yeah. And it's not like they show the other kind every issue either. I don't know if we've seen them for the last two issues, have we? They're still out there. They're still a threat, but...
I don't think so, because right now it's the Lords of Order who kind of been the sort of antagonist.
Yeah. So, and they're the Lords of Order are wanting the other kind to defeat magic, because their big plan we discussed last time we talked about this title, which is they were going to let the other kind do their thing and kind of hide in their amulets and helmets and stuff, while the other kind fed on all the magic till it was gone, and then, you know, died from starvation, basically. That was their big plan. And, of course, they're trying to go through with it. Really, another great issue of Justice League Dark, and I'm excited about reading the next one.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Terrifics number 16. I love this issue of the Terrifics. We finally found out that the Herald's name is Pixie Licks. And if you were unsure last issue that this wasn't DC's version of Silver Surfer, it was definitely confirmed in this issue when she called herself his Herald. I like Plastic Man's stories about Sister Mary Edward and how everything keeps coming back to the 10 plagues of Egypt. I found it especially funny when he talked about saltwater taffy was his favorite and how nowadays that feels kind of like cannibalism. The fly guys were also interesting when they gave him their armor for their baubles, which were the T-spheres. And we see Mr. Terrific was whisked away when his energy was depleted, and he met the new sphere, which I'm guessing is supposed to be the Galactus who's behind this, because they kept saying that New Sphere needs to eat. But it's a computer, so I'm wondering what it needs to eat. Does it need to eat energy? Does it need to eat something else? I'm hoping they answer that soon.
Yeah, I think we'll start to get more answers. It definitely seems like we'll get more answers in regards to that next issue. You know what surprised me? I felt stupid because I didn't notice it last issue that it's a different writer. This is not a Lemire story.
Oh, it's not? I didn't notice that either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming it must. I will admit I did not go back and check, but I can't imagine that Jeff Lemire wrote the first issue and didn't write this one.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even notice.
No, I didn't either. That's the thing. Like, I read the issue and I was like, oh, this is good. I liked it.
Who actually wrote it?
See, well, that would require me to take notes.
We're both checking, aren't we? All right, who wrote this sucker? I don't even see it in. I don't see the credits. What is it, at the end of the issue?
I thought it was at the beginning.
I didn't see it.
On the cover?
Yeah, I saw the last name, but I don't recognize it. Segovia? Oh, there it is right there. It was at the beginning. It's where Plaz comes crashing through as the semi. And it says The God Game, Part 2. Jean Nguyen Yang. Oh, Segovia was the artist. It's whoever Jean Nguyen Yang is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know any comics that Jean has done before, but this story's been good so far.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even tell it wasn't Lemire that wrote it, so obviously he did a good job of it. It felt like any other terrific story to me. Another thing I liked about this issue is we got to see Element Dog and Offspring. Is that what they're going to call Plastic Man's son, is Offspring?
It should be. That is his name traditionally.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. So I like seeing them in this little bit of story, and that weird mouth kind of formed on Element Dog, which we see the same mouth appear on Metamorpho a couple pages later. I thought that was interesting. I'm guessing this is kind of the next plague, but they didn't really show it on anybody else, so I'm curious about that.
I didn't get enough answers for that, to be honest with you. Totally clear what was going on there.
Yeah. We get to the end of the issue, and we get King Stag. And we know the real Stag is outside the sphere, so this is some sort of computer simulation. But what I'm curious is King Stag supposed to represent Moses's Pharaoh? And is Mr. Terrific going to have to ask him to let his people go? One of the things I'm curious is, we're doing the 10 plagues. The last plague is supposed to be the death of the firstborn son. Is this New Sphere's plan? Is he wanting to kill every firstborn male on Earth? Is that what he needs to feed on? Is he feed on humans? Does he feed on computer or electrical energy? I'm just curious what he's going to be eating or what he needs to eat. I very much want that answered. So I'm hoping they explain it next issue. But I got to say, I'm really loving this story.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm hoping we get more. This feels like a short arc overall. It feels like this is like a 3-4 issue story, which is fine. But if you're going to do the homage to Silver Surfer, I'd love more than that.
I agreed. So we'll have to see. I don't even know. I've lost track what plague we're on. What plague is what plague? I have to crack open the Bible and look at it. Because I don't remember what plague goes to what number and what set or what such. I imagine we're going to be going through all 10 plagues in this story, but they are doing it in an interesting, funny way. I got to admit that. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Wonder Woman number 71. So this issue begins where the last issue left off, with a riot of people in Summer Grove angry with Atlanteades. The goddess uses her power to calm people, and then they learn that there's consequences to their actions. So we got that part of the story going on. The second part of the story, we see that the sword that Maggie got a few issues ago leads her to the Shrine of Atlanteades, where she finds an underground tunnel and a minotaur. We see Wonder Woman come to her rescue, and Diana believes that this may be the way back to Atlantis, or how the Olympian gods got to Earth. So I'm very curious about that part of the story.
This was a really cool wrap-up to this arc. I really have liked how we've gotten these short arcs that sort of build Wonder Woman's journey. I think it's made the journey feel like it's helped make the journey long, which is good, but without feeling repetitive.
Yeah, exactly. And it keeps building a little. We keep learning a little more and a little more about what's going on. And we know this has a direct effect from the Justice League Dark storyline, because we know the Other Kind invaded Olympus. They told us that during Justice League Dark. So it's been interesting to see Wonder Woman's title dealing with that also, but in a different way, that the stories don't interfere with each other.
Yeah.
And it's got Wonder Woman on a different mission, which is, it's been cool. It's been cool seeing the Olympic stuff and how they've been inserting it into the Wonder Woman story here.
This has been a great, ever since this new creative team came on, I've been a huge fan of what they've been doing. Like I said, I like the basic overall idea that Wonder Woman is trying to figure out what happened to Olympus and to all the Greek gods and to her own home island is a really cool idea. But then I also love the way that they're choosing to tell that story is by giving us little mini adventures, because it gives us that satisfaction of an ending. You know what I mean? Like, I like that we're getting an epic journey, but we're not stuck on one long story. We're getting that sort of satisfying narrative arc going through it while still building the bigger story.
Yeah. And if they wanted to, they could drag the story out for quite a while if they wanted to, because there's a lot of other Greek gods and stuff we could run into before they finish this story. We could have a lot of adventures on this big, long journey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I totally agree. And I think we will. I mean, I don't foresee, this doesn't seem like the main story is really that close to wrapping up.
Right. And can it really wrap up before the storyline's done in Justice League Dark? So, all very interesting. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
Dragons do not do well in captivity.
How do you know this?
That's what I do. I
podcast.
And I know things.
Hi, I'm Robin Paris from The Room, and you're listening to We Podcast and We Know Things.
Hello, this is Grant Kirkhope. I'm famous for saying Ubinaka and Ikobokum, and you're listening to We Podcast and We Know Things.
It's more than Nick, okay, man. You're listening to Greg and Sam on the We Podcast and We Know Things, y'all.
And we're back. Let's talk Swamp Thing, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. Abby Arcane investigates what seems to be a deadly swamp-borne virus in a small town in Louisiana, but soon discovers that the swamp holds mysterious and terrifying secrets. I really like this first episode of Swamp Thing. I think Crystal Reed did a great job portraying Abby Arcane. I really liked Andy Bean's portrayal of Alec Holland, and I thought the two characters worked well together. I like that both characters have baggage from previous mistakes and that they're working through them, and I also enjoyed the mystery of the swamp.
Well said. I thought this was a solid pilot. I'm very interested to see where they go with the story. I like how they've this is pretty close to the general origin of Swamp Thing. They've changed it slightly for the show. All things, I think, that work. I also like that it looks like we're going to get a little bit more of the DC Magic Universe in this, too, because we've got Xanadu. So I'm hoping Constantine shows up at some point. That's all I'm saying.
That would be freaking awesome.
I don't think he will, but that is where the character got his start.
Now, I know we talked about the trailer a few weeks ago, and you stated how you thought the show would may lean more toward the horror genre. I did not find this really that scary at all. It felt more like a suspense thriller kind of drama thing to me.
I don't know. I think it's still going for that. I wouldn't say like slasher horror, but it is going for that unsettling. I don't know how to say it. Like fancy horror, if that makes any sense.
I don't know. I didn't.
It's a little bit. It reminds me a little bit of the Hannibal TV show that they did. That I would not necessarily describe that as horror, but they had things in there that were horrific, if that makes sense. Also, my girlfriend would disagree with you because she found this terrifying, and I found that hilarious.
Because
she loved Doom Patrol, and I was like, hey, the new DC show's out. You want to watch with me? It's Swamp Thing. Oh yeah, sure. I may or may not have withheld the fact that it was a horror show, which is not her thing.
I didn't find this scary at all. Of course, I knew Alec Holland was going to become Swamp Thing. I mean, that was a given.
She did not. So she was legitimately upset when Alec Holland got shot and then fell into the swamp. She was like, what? No! My enjoyment of this pilot was definitely increased a lot by watching it with somebody who knew nothing about Swamp Thing.
Oh, man, that's funny. One thing about this episode that really intrigued me was in this episode we see Maria Sunderland and Abby's bar conversation. She outright blames Abby for his daughter's death. And we see that Abby confessed to Alec that she had killed her best friend, but we don't get any details on that. And even though the show hasn't come out straight out and told us yet, I'm guessing Shauna's death was an accident. And I'm really curious to learn more details about this. I see that Maria Sunderland character being a real antagonist in this. I mean, I thought that bar scene was great.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think both the husband and the wife are going to end up being antagonistic. I'm curious. We have Abby Arcane, and they've not referenced her dad at all. So I'm curious if that's going to come into play this season or not. I assume it would, but it kind of feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't it feel like the businessman, the rich businessman, the husband, seems like he's going to be the villain?
Yes.
Did you get that feeling?
Yeah, I did get that feeling.
But he's not Arcane, unless they're going to make him their version of Arcane, but then why have Abby Arcane? Right?
Yeah, I don't know. But you're right, it does feel like he's the villain, so...
So have you read a lot of Swamp Thing?
No, I haven't read any Swamp Thing. One of the points I was going to talk... I was going to ask you... One of the questions I had for you that you already answered for me was, I was going to tell you, I have not read any Swamp Thing comics other than the character appearing in other titles that I've read. So I've seen Swamp Thing pop up in things over the years, but I've never actually read Swamp Thing comics. And one of the things I was going to ask you is, how true to the comics is this portrayal? Which you had already answered. So,
it's a pretty close origin. I mean, it's updated, obviously, to be in 2019. But, I mean, really pretty, like, about as good as you can expect. I wouldn't expect a page-for-page adaptation, you know what I mean?
Right.
But, so anyway, so Swamp Thing's main villain, by far, is Arcane. And Abby Arcane, I can't remember when she gets introduced, but she's his daughter. And so I'm assuming if you put Abby Arcane in, you're going to also have Arcane, And so I'm curious when we'll get him, if we're going to get him this season, if we're going to get a tease of him, if they're going to do it kind of like what they did with Trigon. So, yeah, so it'll be – so one of the things – so, like, the core concept, I think, starting really with – I believe Alan Moore is really the one that went with this, because in the original Swamp Thing run, he's just kind of a – like, it's more of your traditional, like, monster comic. Good stuff. Like, it's good stuff. I've read it, and I enjoyed it. But then Alan Moore is the one that really gets into, like, the kind of weird – as you would expect, Swamp Thing, and that version is basically what people have continued with. But the core concept with Swamp Thing is that he's the champion of the green, basically, like all plant life. He's sort of like their champion and is connected to that life force. And at some point, Arcane becomes the, I don't know if the champion, but at least a representative of the red, which is like animals, living things, and the two frequently butt heads. And I don't know if they're going to get into that side or if they're going to go with the, like, classic Len Wein original Swamp Thing and really just be more, like, monster comic stuff. But we'll see. I'm really, this was a really cool pilot, and I'm curious to see where they go with it. And I'm curious to see, we both think that I'm blanking on the guy's name, but the business owner is probably the bad guy, and I'm curious in what way? Or is he just going to be an evil businessman, or is he going to end up getting magic in him too?
I don't know. That'll be interesting to find out. I got the sense he was the one that was putting the stuff in the swamp and trying to release it.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with you there.
So, very, very curious to find out more about what's going on. All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so I highly recommend, if you're watching this, you've got the DC Universe app, check out the original Len Wein run. I think they probably also have the Alan Moore run, which is fantastic as well. But really, check out that original, like, read, like, the first, like, four or five. You'll get Swamp Thing's origin in the first one. You'll see Arcane in the second issue. He pops up. And then I can't remember, it's a few issues later where you get like the classic version of Arcane really starts to come up a few issues later. It's really cool stuff. I mean, it's classic 70s horror comic. It was awesome. I first read this back in college. I was taking a comics history class, and part of what we were doing in the set, we were reading 70s horror stuff. So like we did like Dead Man, we did The Spectre and Swamp Thing. And so you got, it was some really cool comics in there.
Awesome. All right, we'll have a link to that in our show notes. For my shout out, I'm going to shout out about the DC Universe app game, because I started playing it again several weeks ago. I'd gotten away from it, but I'm playing it again. They just introduced Mr. Miracle, and I have that character now, so I'm working on getting him upgraded, and I'm having a blast playing this game again. So that's my shout out for this week. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can read our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we will be talking the Catwoman Annual, the Detective Comics Annual, Doomsday Clock number 10's out, Heroes in Crisis number 9, Superman Leviathan Rising Special number 1, and of course we'll be talking episode 2 of Swamp Thing. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move up.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.